Come in.
Oh, hi. I see you found your way down to the archives. Let's see. What was the case you requested? Ah, here it is. The Adventure of the Second Stain. A very complex and important mystery. I think you'll really enjoy it. Let's get started, shall we?
It has been too long a time since I have communicated the exploits of Sherlock Holmes to the public. It is not due to a waning interest from the public or a lack of cases. The real reason lay in the reluctance which Mr. Holmes has shown to the continued publication of his experiences. It was only upon my pointing out to him that this adventure was the single most important international case which he has ever been called upon to handle that I at last succeeded in obtaining his consent. It was a Tuesday morning in autumn when we found a visitor of European fame within the walls of our humble room in Baker Street. The man was the Right Honorable Trelawney Hope, Secretary of European Affairs, and the most rising statesman in the country. He was a clear-cut and elegant man, but it was easy to see from his worn and anxious face that it was business of the most pressing importance which had brought him.
Proceed, Mr. Trelawney Hope. Please, share with me the details of your missing document, did you say?
When I discovered my loss, Mr. Holmes, which was at 8 o'clock this morning, I at once informed the Prime Minister. It was at his suggestion that I have come to see you.
Have you informed the police?
No, sir, we have not done so, nor is it possible that we should do so. To inform the police must, in the long run, mean to inform the public. This is what we particularly desire to avoid.
And why, sir?
Because the document in question is of such immense importance that its publication might very easily, I might almost say probably, lead to European complications of the utmost moment. It is not too much to say that peace or war may hang upon the issue.
I understand. Now, Mr. Trelawney Hope, I should be much obliged if you would tell me exactly the circumstances under which this document disappeared.
The letter, for it was a letter from a foreign potentate, was received 6 days ago. It was of such importance that I never left it in my safe, but have taken it with me each evening to my house at Whitehall Terrace and kept it in my bedroom in a locked dispatch box. It was there last night, of that I am certain. I actually opened the box while I was dressing for dinner and saw the document inside. This morning, it was gone. The dispatch box had stood beside the glass upon my dressing table all night. I am a light sleeper, so was my wife. We are both prepared to swear that no one could have entered the room during the night. And yet, I repeat, that paper is gone.
What time did you dine?
7:30.
How long was it before you went to bed?
My wife had gone to the opera. I waited up for her. It was 11:30 before we went to our room.
Then, for 4 hours, the dispatch box had lain unguarded.
No one is ever permitted to enter that room save my valet or my wife's maid during the rest of the day. They are trusty servants, and besides, neither of them could possibly have known that there was anything more valuable than the ordinary departmental papers in my dispatch box.
Who did know of the existence of that letter?
No one in the house.
Surely your wife knew?
No, sir. I have said nothing to my wife until I was missing the paper this morning.
Could she have guessed?
No, Dr. Watson. She could not have guessed. Nor could anyone have guessed.
Who is there in England who did know of the existence of this letter?
Each member of Cabinet was informed of it yesterday and pledged to secrecy. Besides the members of the Cabinet, there are 2 or possibly 3 departmental officials who know of the letter. No one else in England, Mr. Holmes, I assure you.
Have you the names of these individuals?
I have prepared a list of the Cabinet members and departmental officials who have this knowledge. I thought it might be an important piece of evidence in your search.
Evidence A.
Indeed, Watson.
Hi there, it's me again, the archivist. I hate to interrupt your story, but our characters have just mentioned the first evidence envelope. If you haven't yet, hit pause and open evidence A. Observe, take notes, and when you're ready, press play again to continue with the story. I'll try not to interrupt again unless it's absolutely necessary. So promise me that you'll listen closely for when to open your other evidence envelopes. Good luck, detectives.
Could anyone outside of England have knowledge of this letter?
I believe that no one abroad has seen it save the man who wrote it. I am well convinced that his ministers, that the usual official channels, have not been employed.
Now, sir, I must ask you more particularly what this document is and why its disappearance should have such momentous consequences.
Mr. Holmes, the envelope is of pale blue colour. There is a seal of red wax stamped with a crouching lion. It is addressed in large, bold handwriting to...
I fear, sir, that, interesting and indeed essential as these details are, I must know what was the letter.
That is a state secret of the utmost importance, and I cannot tell you, nor do I see that it is necessary. If by the aid of the powers which you are said to possess you can find such an envelope, you will have deserved well of your country, and earned any reward which lies in our power to bestow.
You are one of the most busy men in the country. I regret exceedingly that I cannot help you in this matter, and any continuation of this interview would be a waste of your time.
But think of England, sir. It is your duty.
I am thinking of England, sir.
I must accept your terms, Mr. Holmes. No doubt you are right. It is unreasonable for me to expect you to act unless I give you our entire confidence. I will tell you, relying entirely on your honour and that of your colleague, Dr. Watson, I could not imagine a greater misfortune for the country than that this affair should come out.
You may safely trust us both.
The letter, then, is from a certain foreign potentate who has been ruffled by some recent colonial developments of this country. It has been hurriedly typed up and upon his own responsibility entirely. The message, well, certain phrases in it are so provocative a character that its publication would undoubtedly lead to the most dangerous state of feeling in this country. I do not hesitate to say that within a week of the publication of that letter, this country would be involved in a great war.
Have you informed the sender? Perhaps he desires the publication of the
letter. We have strong reason to believe that he already understands that he has acted in an indiscreet and hot-headed manner. It would be a greater blow to him and to his country than to us if this letter were to come out.
If this is so, whose interest is it that the letter should come out? Why should anyone desire to steal it or to publish
it? There, Dr. Watson, you take me into regions of high international politics. The whole of Europe is an armed camp, and Great Britain holds the scales. If Britain were driven into war with one confederacy, it would assure the supremacy of the other confederacy, whether or not they joined the war. Do you follow?
Very clearly. It is then in the interest of the enemies of this potentate to secure and publish this letter so as to make a breach between his country and ours?
Yes, sir.
And to whom would this document be sent if it fell into the hands of an enemy?
To any of the great chancelleries of Europe. It is probably speeding on its way thither at the present instant as fast as steam can carry it. Now, Mr. Holmes, you are in full possession of the facts. What course do you recommend?
You think, sir, that unless this document is recovered, there will be war?
I think it very probable.
Then, sir, prepare for war.
That is a hard saying, Mr. Holmes.
Consider the fact, sir. The letter was taken in a window of time, starting yesterday evening at 7:30 and ending this morning sometime before 8 a.m. Now, sir, where can it be now? No one has any reason to retain it. It has been passed rapidly on to those who need it. What chance have we now to overtake or even to trace it? It is beyond our reach.
What you say is perfectly logical, Mr. Holmes. I feel that the matter is indeed out of our hands.
But let us presume, for argument's sake, that the document was taken by the maid or by the valet.
They are both old and tried servants.
Anyone can be bought, sir, when the price is right. If it is somebody in the house who has taken it, to whom would the thief take it? To one of several international spies and secret agents whose names are tolerably familiar to me. There are three who may be said to be the heads of their profession. I will begin by going round and finding if each of them is at his post. If one is missing, especially if he has disappeared since last night, we will have some indication as to where the document has gone.
I believe you are right, Holmes. He would take so valuable a prize to the headquarters with his own hands.
I trust that your actions will bear results, in one direction or another. Should there be any fresh developments during the day, I shall communicate with you, and you will no doubt let me know the results of your own inquiries. Thank you, gentlemen.
When our illustrious visitor had departed, Holmes lit his pipe in silence and sat for some time lost in the deepest thought. I had opened the morning paper and was immersed in a sensational crime which had occurred in London the night before, when my friend sprang to his feet and laid his pipe down upon the mantelpiece.
Yes, the situation is desperate, but not hopeless. Even now, it is just possible that it has not yet passed out of his hands. After all, it is a question of money with these fellows, and I have the British Treasury behind me. It is conceivable that the fellow might hold it back to see what bids come from this side before he tries his luck on the other. There are only those three capable of playing so bold a game. There are Oberstein, La Rothière, and Eduardo Lucas. I shall visit each of them in turn, and if it's on the market, I'll buy it.
Is that Eduardo Lucas of Godolphin Street?
Yes.
You will not see him.
Why not?
He was murdered in his house last night.
Watson!
It's here, Holmes, in the paper. The Hound and Herald...
Aha! Well, Watson, what do you make of this?
It is an amazing coincidence.
A coincidence? Here is one of the three men whom we had named as possible actors in this drama, and he meets a violent death during the very hours when we know that that drama was being enacted. No, my dear Watson, the two events are connected. Must be connected. It is for us to find the connection.
But now the official police must know all.
Not at all. They know all they see at Godolphin Street. They know, and shall know, nothing of Whitehall Terrace. Only we know of both events, and can trace the relation between them.
You have a visitor, Mr. Holmes. Lady Hilda Trelawney Hope.
Indeed. Ask the lady if she will be kind enough to step up.
Come right in, my dear. Mr. Holmes will see you.
A moment later, our modest apartment, already so distinguished that morning, was further honored by the entrance of the most lovely woman in London. And yet, as we saw it that morning, it was not her beauty which would be the first thing to impress the observer. Terror, not beauty, was what sprang first to the eye as our visitor lowered the voluminous hood that had covered her fair hair and obscured her features.
Has my husband been here, Mr. Holmes?
Yes, madam. He has been here.
Mr. Holmes, I implore you not to tell him that I came here.
Your ladyship places me in a very delicate position. I beg that you will sit down and tell me what you desire, but I fear that I cannot make any unconditional promise.
Lady Hilda swept across the room, choosing a chair situated as far as possible from Holmes and myself, and with the window at her back. The light from the street silhouetted her ladyship, turning her blonde hair dark and shadowing her fine features.
If I may ask one of you gentlemen to dim the lamp a little, my anxiety for my husband has left me with a small headache.
Of course.
Thank you, Doctor. Mr. Holmes, I will speak frankly to you in the hope that you will speak frankly in return. There is complete confidence between my husband and me on all matters save one. That is politics. On this his lips are sealed. Now I am aware that a certain paper has disappeared from our house last night. But because the matter is political, my husband refuses to take me into his complete confidence. Now it is essential, I say, that I should thoroughly understand it. You are the only other person, save only these politicians, who knows the true facts. I beg you then, Mr. Holmes, to tell me exactly what has happened and what it will lead to. I assure you that his interests would be best served by taking me into complete confidence. What was this paper that was stolen?
Madam, what you ask me is really impossible.
Ugh.
You must see that this is so, madam. If your husband thinks fit to keep you in the dark over this matter, is it for me to tell what he has withheld?
It is your husband whom you must ask.
I have asked him, Dr. Watson. I come to you both as a last resort. If you cannot tell me anything definite, Mr. Holmes, you may do a great service if you would enlighten me on one point.
What is it, madam?
Is my husband's political career likely to suffer through this incident?
Well, madam, unless it is set right, it may have a very unfortunate effect.
One more question, Mr. Holmes. From an expression which my husband dropped in the first shock of this disaster, I understood that terrible public consequences might arise from the loss of this document.
If he said so, I certainly cannot deny it.
Of what nature are they?
Nay, madam, there again you ask me more than I can possibly answer.
Then I will take up no more of your time. I cannot blame you, Mr. Holmes, for having refused to speak more freely. Once more, I beg that you will say nothing of my visit. Good day.
Now, Watson, the fair sex is your department. What was the lady's game? What did she really want?
Surely her own statement is clear and her anxiety very natural.
Think of her appearance, Watson. Her manner, her restlessness, her tenacity in asking questions. Remember that she comes of a caste who do not lightly show emotion.
She was certainly much moved.
Remember also the curious earnestness with which she assured us that it was best for her husband that she should know all. What did she mean by that?
That is not unnatural, Holmes. In most instances of domestic partnership, there are no secrets between a husband and wife.
Ah, that is an endearing sentiment, but likely far from the truth. And Watson, you must have observed how her ladyship maneuvered to have the light at her back.
Yes, she chose the one chair in the room with the window behind it.
And then asked us to further dim the lights. She did not wish us to see her clearly.
And what could be the point? She is a well-known lady. Her picture has appeared often in the papers alongside that of her husband.
The motives of women are so inscrutable. You remember the woman at Margate whom I suspected for the same reason? No powder on her nose. That proved to be the correct solution. How can you build on such a quicksand? Their most trivial action may mean volumes, or their most extraordinary conduct may depend upon a hairpin or curling tongs.
You speak unfairly of womankind, Holmes. That may be so for some women, but certainly not the entirety of the gender.
You speak of your Mary, I suppose. Love blinds you, Watson.
Not just of Mary. Have you forgotten the woman who recently got the better of you, Holmes? The one whose portrait you keep on the mantle?
Ah, yes. Irene Adler. She is a notable exception, Watson, not the rule. And shall we be off?
I would be pleased to accompany you, but where are we going?
I suggest we while away the morning at Godolphin Street with our friends from Scotland Yard. With Eduardo Lucas lies the solution of our problem. We must stay on guard, my good Watson. There is more here than meets the eye.
Excuse me, sir, but this is a crime scene. You may not enter the premises.
Out of my way, man. This is important. Lestrade!
Sir, stop immediately.
I'm terribly sorry, officer, but this is Sherlock Holmes.
No one is permitted.
Holmes, is that you? Pow! Let him by, McPherson. He'll be more help than not with this mess. Read about our murder in the papers and couldn't keep away, eh, Holmes?
Yeah.
Well, come on in and have a look around. You're welcome to theorise as much as you'd like, just as long as you remember who's actually conducting this investigation.
This is your case, Lestrade. I have not been hired to find Lucas's murderer. I'm just here to satisfy my own curiosity, as it were.
Well, we've been busy since the report went out to the paper this morning. We've got our man, that's plain enough. But I can't figure out why the deuce he did it.
Who have you arrested?
John Mitten. He's the valet to Mr. Eduardo Lucas. He was out visiting his brother in Hammersmith last night, but claims he left by 10.
And Mr. Lucas was found dead just before midnight. He could have easily returned by then.
Easily, if he took a carriage. But Mitten says he walked.
It was a fine night out.
That's what he said too. It's a hard thing to check up on, but I've got men questioning cabbies, seeing if I can catch Mitten in a lie. We interviewed the brother, Henry Mitten. He supports what his brother told us. Left around 10, intended to walk. No reason to doubt his testimony. He's got a respectable job. He's a personal secretary to some lord or other. Good income attached to that, I'm sure.
You said the valet had no motive.
None that we can tell. Lucas's house is filled with expensive objects to Arden Watsits, but nothing was taken. But we did find a small case of Lucas's razors among Mitten's belongings. He claimed they were a gift, but we only have Mitten's word for it.
It seems extraordinary that a man would murder his employer over a box of razors.
Agreed, Dr. Watson. I'd like to find something a little bit more substantial. Formed any theories yet, Holmes?
Nothing valuable was stolen, you say. What about the man's papers?
Oh, come take a look for yourself. I'll be heading back to the yard. If you need me, send a man.
The room into which we were shown was that in which the crime had been committed, but no trace of it now remained, save an ugly, irregular stain upon the carpet. In the window was a sumptuous writing desk. Upon sight of the desk, Holmes descended upon it, flinging himself into the study of Eduardo Lucas's personal papers and correspondence with a singular focus. When he finished with the letters, he pulled out each drawer in the man's desk, running his hands over its surface, turning each upside down and shaking vigorously.
There is nothing here.
Hardly nothing, Holmes.
The only information that I can glean is that Lucas is a keen student of international politics, an indefatigable gossip, a remarkable linguist, an untiring letter writer, and an opera enthusiast. He has saved the program from every opera he's seen. There are five alone from when Carmen was revived in Paris last year.
May I see? Mary and I saw that production. I must say, Holmes, you would have found it particularly interesting.
You may keep it. Lucas does not need it, and with so many here, the inspector will certainly not miss one. However, I see no indication that the letter that we seek is hidden here anywhere. It is possible it was taken from him when he was murdered. But who knew that he had it?
Besides for the government officials on the list that Lord Hope compiled for us?
I do not say besides, Watson. They are all very much suspect in my mind.
But treason, and now murder. These are distinguished members of our government.
Which does not put them above any of the petty motives that tempt all men, rich or poor, distinguished or insignificant. The man. The valet. What is his name again?
John Mitten.
I must see his papers next. Come with me, Watson. Lestrade won't mind if we show ourselves around the establishment.
But surely you'd like to look around this room further. It is where the murder was committed.
I am not here to solve the murder, Watson. I have come to recover a letter. Let us go find the room of the valet.
Mitten's quarters lacked the opulence of the rest of Lucas's house, but were clean. His coat hung neatly on a hook by the door, and his bed was made. A suitcase containing the aforementioned box of razors and a few other personal objects had been flung open on the floor. His desk stood in the corner of the room, and it was to that piece of furniture that Holmes applied his attention.
Aha! Watson, come look at this. Here is the evidence we have been looking for.
That would be evidence B, I believe.
Indeed. Evidence B. I have been a fool. I must admit that. But I think we have just taken an important step forward in this investigation.
I confess, Holmes, that I do not yet see the significance of Mr. Mitten's correspondence.
It is not the significance, but rather the insignificance, Watson. Now, what I would like to know is, why doesn't Eduardo Lucas travel with his valet?
What do you mean?
He sends Mitten a postcard from Paris. Why wasn't he with him? It is common to travel with one's valet. Surely that is one of the reasons to have a manservant.
Perhaps Mr. Lucas had a personal reason for wanting to be alone.
Or conversely, perhaps our Mr. Mitten had a personal reason for needing to stay in London. Perhaps we are both correct, Watson. Time will tell. But I feel we have discovered all we can here for the moment. Let us approach this investigation from the other angle, and pay a visit to Whitehall Terrace. Thank you for the tea, Mrs. Emmett.
Are you sure you wouldn't rather speak to his lordship or Lady Hope? He is at the office, but I expect her back shortly.
I have already spoken with his lordship, and now I desire an interview with you, madam. You must have noticed that both your lady and her husband are in a state of great agitation.
It is not my place to say.
While I cannot tell you the nature of their distress, I can assure you that I have been hired to help relieve their anxieties in this matter.
You don't say. In that case, sir...
For their sake, would you be willing to answer a few questions from my colleague and I?
If it's to help ease my lady's suffering, I will be only so glad to help.
How long have you been a lady's maid for Lady Trelawney Hope?
Going on 8 years, sir.
Are you aware what it is that's troubling her ladyship?
I don't know the whole of it, sir. But I gather that something's gone missing.
Exactly right. I think, out of respect for your employer, we'd better not go into more detail than that.
That would be my preference, sir.
I must know who was present in the house last night.
Well, besides for his lordship, Mr. Jacobs, the butler, his lordship's valet, cook, and Alice. She's the housemaid.
Did anyone receive any visitors yesterday evening, after dinner, or into the night?
No. The mistress went out to see an opera, and his lordship went to his study after dinner.
Did any of the staff have any visitors? Any late deliveries from the grocer? Anyone in to look at the gas?
Oh, no, sir. Nothing like that.
I see. And after his lordship went to bed?
Well, nobody could have come through the house without our knowing, if that's what you mean, sir. It's an old house. The doors stick, you see, and the floorboards creak something awful. You'd have noticed it yourself when you came in, sir. I'd have heard someone coming and going in the night. I'm sure of it.
Did any of the staff leave the house for any reason last night?
No, sir.
And when did her ladyship return home from the theatre?
It was around 11, sir. The master waited up for her, and they went up to bed together.
Did she take a carriage?
I imagine she walked. My lady is a great fan of walking when the weather is fine.
Then we only have her word for it that she attended the opera at all.
Sir, her ladyship would never lie.
I can assure you that I was at the opera last night, Mr. Holmes.
My lady! Mr. Holmes said that he was here on behalf of his lordship, and that if I answered his questions...
Mr. Holmes has promised to help his lordship with a delicate matter, Mrs. Emmett. You are doing him a favour to answer anything Mr. Holmes asks.
Oh, thank you.
I was in the audience at the Grand Opera House last evening. I went alone, but I am sure that I was seen there by a great number of people. I have the programme from the performance, if you'd like it. Perhaps that can serve as proof of my attendance.
Thank you for your help, your ladyship. Watson and I have learned a great deal, and will now take our departure.
If you can tell me, what have you learned?
That your servants are both trustworthy and beyond suspicion. Good day to you both. We can see ourselves out.
I was surprised that Holmes was finished so quickly with the interviews at Whitehall Terrace, and told him so myself once we made it outside.
I have no need to interview anyone else there. No one came to the house. And no one, excepting Lady Trelawney Hope, left
it. But Mr. Jacobs, the housemaid, they might have heard something different.
I very much doubt it. It was Mrs. Emmett I wanted to talk to in particular. Lady Trelawney Hope's motives remain a mystery to me, Watson. I was hoping for some insight.
She couldn't have stolen the letter, at the very least.
Yes, the opera. Let us take a look at this program, Watson. Carmen. Watson, may I see the programme from Eduardo Lucas's house? Aha. Watson, I'm not sure yet how it fits in, but I feel the disparate pieces of this investigation are starting to fall into place. The players are now all assembled, as they say.
What is it, Holmes?
Take a look for yourself. You are bound to see the connection. This opera program has just become a valuable clue. Let us label it Evidence C.
All that remaining day and the next, Holmes was in a mood which his friends would call taciturn, and others morose. He ran out and ran in, smoked incessantly, played snatches on his violin, and hardly answered the casual questions which I put to him. It was evident to me that things were not going well with him or his quest. On the third day, His frustration came to a boiling point.
I know she is involved, but I cannot, for the life of me, figure out how.
Of whom are you speaking? The maid?
Don't be ridiculous, John. Her. The woman.
Sherlock seized the photo on the mantel and shoved it roughly into my hands. I was only able to glance upon the striking and intelligent face for a moment before he snatched the picture back, shoving it angrily into the inside of his pocket.
She must be a part of this. It is too much of a coincidence.
Ah, yes. Irene Adler.
Surely you noticed that she plays the titular role in Carmen. Even you could not overlook that detail.
But your comment is offensive. And you forget that I attended the performance when it was in Paris, Sherlock. I mentioned that you might have found it interesting. But...
Hang it all. I'm sorry, John. It's the inactivity. It gnaws at my very soul. Only one important thing has happened in the last 3 days, and that is that nothing has happened. I get reports almost hourly from the government, and it is certain that nowhere in Europe is there any sign of trouble. Now, if this letter were loose... No, it can't be loose. But if it isn't loose, where can it be? Who has it? Why is it held back? That's the question that beats in my brain like a hammer.
Surely no news of this letter's possible disastrous effect is good news, is it not?
You cut me to the quick. It is good news for the Crown. That cannot be denied. But I am afraid that it is the problem of why that plagues me, Watson. Why have we heard nothing?
Have you paid a visit to Irene Adler? As you have said, it is possible that she plays a role in this mystery.
She must. But I have no rational connection between her and the letter. Am I to go to her and demand that she confess all? She is much too intelligent to give anything away before her business, whatever that might be, is concluded. What if her connection lies in a different strain entirely, and she knows nothing of the letter? My very visit will alert her to its significance, and what chain of reactions might that set off?
It is a delicate task, investigating the disappearance of something that no one must even know exists.
A constable just came around, Mr. Holmes. Inspector Lestrade would like to see you at the Lucas House. Apparently he has observed something of interest.
This could be it at last. Put on your hat, Watson, and we will stroll down together to Westminster.
I have news, gentlemen. Monsieur de Bourges of the Parisian police has sent a wire just this morning. We've had some back and forth, comparing photographs and the like, but we can now be sure. Our Mr. Lucas of Godolphin Street, London, has another identity.
Monsieur Henri Fournet of Paris, France.
Hang it all, Holmes. How did you know that?
The programmes from the opera, Inspector. Mr. Lucas was a patron, as well as an enthusiast.
Well... Be that as it may, for some reason Lucas was living a double life. But here's the real kicker, he had a wife. Or did you know that already too?
I have indeed performed a cursory check on the man, to satisfy my own curiosity in the matter. But pray continue.
The wife, Madame Fournay, who appears to have had no knowledge of his life here, gets the wind up about how much time he's spending abroad, and, being a woman, immediately suspects adultery. There is evidence that a woman, who might have been Madame Fournay, was seen for some hours upon Monday night, and then again on the following evening watching this house.
And she murdered him?
That's what we think. Admittedly, the woman is in no state to give evidence one way or the other.
Has she been killed too?
Nothing of the sort. You have a dark mind, Doctor. She's just cracked up. De Bourges has got some specialist from dancing looking into her, but our French friends have pieced together a timeline. She knocked at the door, a surprise visit. He let her in. She told him how she traced him, reproached him. One thing led to another, and then with that dagger so handy, the end soon came. We've got it all clear as far as we had seen it.
And yet you have sent for me.
Ah, yes. That's another matter. A mere trifle, but the sort of thing you can take an interest in. Queer, you know. It has nothing to do with the main fact. Can't have, on the face of it.
What is it, then?
Well, you know, After a crime of this sort, we have to be very careful, keep things in their position. Nothing has been moved. Officer in charge here day and night. This morning, as the man was buried and the investigation over, so far as this room was concerned, we thought we could tidy up a bit. This carpet, you see, it's not fastened down, only just laid there. We had occasion to raise it. We found...
Yes, you found?
You see that bloodstain on the carpet? Well, a great deal must have soaked through, must it not?
Undoubtedly it must.
Well, you'll be surprised to hear that there is no stain on the white floorboard to correspond.
No stain? But there must
be. Yes, so you would say. But the fact remains that there isn't.
The underside of the carpet is as stained as the upper. It must have left a mark.
Now, I'll show you the explanation. There is a second stain, but it does not correspond with the other. See for yourself. Under this corner here, we have a great crimson stain upon the floor. What do you make of that, Mr. Holmes?
Why, it is simple enough. The two stains did correspond, but the carpet has been turned round. As it was square and unfastened, it was easily done.
The official police don't need you, Mr. Holmes, to tell them that the carpet must have been turned round. That's clear enough. But what I want to know is, who shifted the carpet and why?
Look here, Lestrade. Has that constable in the passage been in charge of the place all the time?
Yes, he has.
Well, take my advice. Examine him carefully. Don't do it before us. We'll wait here. You take him into the back room. You'll be more likely to get a confession out of him alone. Ask him how he dared to admit people and leave them alone in this room. Don't ask him if he has done it. Take it for granted. Tell him that a full confession is his only chance of forgiveness. Do exactly what I tell you.
By George, if he knows I have it out of him. MacPherson!
Now, Watson, now!
At once, all the demoniacal force of the man masked behind that listless manner burst out in a paroxysm of energy. He tore the drugget from the floor, and in an instant was down on his hands and knees, clawing at each of the squares of wood beneath it. One turned sideways as he dug his nails into the edge of it. It hinged back like the lid of a box. A small black cavity opened beneath it. Holmes plunged his eager hand into it.
It's empty. Quick, Watson, quick! The carpet! Get it back again!
Have you found out the truth of the matter?
Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Holmes. I can see you're bored to death with the whole affair. Well, he has confessed all right. Come in here, MacPherson. Let these gentlemen hear of your most inexcusable conduct.
I meant no harm, sir, I'm sure. The young woman came to the door Tuesday evening, mistook the house she did, and then we got talking. It's lonesome when you're on duty here all day.
Well, what happened then?
She wanted to see where the crime was done. I'd read about it in the papers, she said. She was a very respectable, well-spoken young woman, sir, and I saw no harm in letting her have a peep. When she saw that mark on the carpet, down she dropped on the floor and lay as if she were dead. I went round the corner to Ivy Plant for some brandy, and by the time I brought it back, the young woman had recovered and was off, ashamed of herself, I dare say, and dared not face me.
How about moving that drugget?
Well, sir, it was a bit rumpled, certainly, when I came back. You see, she fell on it and it lies on a polished floor with nothing to keep it in place. I straightened it out afterwards.
It's a lesson to you. You can't deceive me, Constable MacPherson. It's lucky for you, my man, that nothing is missing, or you would find yourself in Queer Street. I'm sorry to have taken you down here over such petty business, Mr. Holmes, but I thought the point of the second stain not corresponding with the first would interest you.
Certainly, it was most interesting. Has this woman only been here once, Constable?
Yes, sir, only once.
Who was she?
Don't know her name, sir. Was answering an advertisement about typewriting and came to the wrong number. Very pleasant, genteel young woman, sir.
Handsome?
Oh, yes, sir. And she had a pretty coaxing ways. Oh, officer, do let me have a peep, says she, and I thought there was no harm in letting her just put her head in through the door.
What time was it?
It was just growing dusk at the time. They were lighting the lamps as I came back with the brandy.
Very good. Thank you, Constable. Oh, and Lestrade, what of the valet?
The valet? You mean Mitten? No reason to hold on to him any longer. We'll be releasing him from custody this afternoon.
If you can find a reason to hold him just a little bit longer, I would be in your debt. He might not have killed his master, but I am certain that he is not wholly innocent of a crime.
If it's as you say, I can wait till we have confirmation from Monsieur de Bourges' specialist.
I thank you. Come, Watson. I think that we have more important work elsewhere.
The repentant constable accompanied us outside the house. As he opened the door for us, Holmes turned on the step and extracted a photograph from the inner pocket of his jacket. He held it up for the constable to see.
Was this the lady that you admitted on Tuesday night?
Good Lord, sir.
As I thought.
But it's not the lady I admitted, but it is the other one. How did you know, sir?
The other one?
The lady I spoke of. She was fair-haired. Not like this picture at all. But a second woman that night, the French wife. This is her picture. I'm sure of it. You see, Mr. Holmes, after all that went on with the first woman fainting, I wasn't about to let anyone else in the house after that.
And this woman in the picture tried to gain entry that same night?
Yes, sir. It was several hours later, round about 11. It was dark, but there's a street light just there, so I could see rather well. It was the man's French wife. She told me so herself, that she was married to Mr. Lucas, and so she should be let into her house. But of course, I didn't know he was married at the time, and I wasn't about to let another lady in. Oh, she railed on me, she did. Threatened to call the yard and talk to me inspector. She said I was violating her familial rights. And now that we know that she was the one who's murdered him, I'm glad I sent her off unsatisfied.
Remarkable. Constable, will you ask your inspector if I can see the wire sent from the French police?
I'll ask him, sir.
A remarkable woman through and through. Watson, is there nothing she won't think of?
Here's the cable, sir. Inspector Lestrade says you can hold on to it if you'd like. He's gotten all he needs from it.
Thank you, Constable. Let us read this telegram, Watson. I feel confident that it is the last piece of the puzzle. Evidence D.
Hello again. The time has come to open your final evidence envelope. After you carefully examine its contents, it's time to solve the mystery. Jot down your notes, compile your theories, and decide who committed this crime. On our website, just below the audio player you're listening to now, you'll find a place to submit your answers. You've seen and heard all the same things as Sherlock Holmes. Have you arrived at the same conclusions? When your answer has been safely submitted, hit play and continue on with your mystery.
Excellent. This confirms my theory. Come, friend Watson. The curtain rings up for the last act. You will be relieved to hear that with a little tact and management upon our part, nobody will be the penny worse for what might have been a very ugly incident.
You have solved it.
Hardly that, Watson. There are some points which are as dark as ever. But we have so much that it will be our own fault if we cannot get the rest. We will go straight to Whitehall Terrace and bring the matter to a head.
When we arrived at the residence of the European secretary, it was for Lady Hilda Trelawney Hope that Sherlock Holmes inquired. We were shown into the morning room.
Mr. Holmes, I desired, as I have explained, to keep my visit to you a secret. And yet you compromise me by coming here and specifically asking for me, and so showing that there are business relations between us.
Unfortunately, madam, I had no possible alternative. I have been commissioned to recover this immensely important paper. I must therefore ask you to be kind enough to place it in my hands.
You insult me, Mr. Holmes.
Come, come, madam, it is useless. Give up the letter.
The butler shall show you out now.
Do not ring for the butler, Lady Hilda. If you do, then all my earnest efforts to avoid a scandal will be frustrated. Give up the letter, and all will be set right. If you will work with me, I can arrange everything. If you work against me, I must expose you.
You are trying to frighten me.
I know of your visit to Eduardo Lucas, of your giving him this document, of your ingenious return to the room, and of the manner in which you took the letter from the hiding place under the carpet.
You are mad, Mr. Holmes.
The policeman has identified you. A handsome, fair-haired woman.
That could describe anyone.
I can show the man a picture of you, cut from the society pages to confirm. But I think we agree that it would be better for all parties if I do not.
I tell you again, Mr. Holmes, that you are under some absurd illusion.
I am sorry for you, Lady Hilda. I have done my best for you. I can see that it is all in vain. When does Mr. Trelawney Hope return home?
He will be home at 1:45.
Still 1/4 hour. Very good. I shall wait.
For heaven's sake, don't tell him, Mr. Holmes. I love him so. I would not bring one shadow on his life, and this I know would break his heart.
I am thankful, madam, that you have come to your senses, even at this last moment. There is not an instant to lose. Where is the letter?
Here it is, Mr. Holmes.
How can we return it? Quick, quick, we must think of some way. Where is the dispatch box?
Still in his bedroom.
What a stroke of luck. Quick, madam, bring it here.
What did you have in mind, Holmes?
I'm not sure yet myself, but if we can just...
Here it is, Mr. Holmes.
How did you open it before? You have a duplicate key. Of course you have. Open it.
From out of her bosom, Lady Hilda drew a small key. The box flew open. It was stuffed with papers. Holmes thrust the blue envelope deep down into the heart of them, between the leaves and some other document. The box was hastily shut, locked, and returned to the bedroom.
Now we are ready for him. And we still have 10 minutes. I am going far to screen you, Lady Hilda. In return, you will spend the time in telling me frankly the real meaning of this extraordinary affair.
I will tell you everything. Oh, Mr. Holmes, there is no woman in all of London who loves her husband as I do. And yet if he knew how I have acted, how I have been compelled to act, he would never forgive me. For his own honour stands so high that he could not forget or pardon a lapse in another. Help me, Mr. Holmes.
Quick, madam, the time grows short.
It was a letter of mine, Mr. Holmes. An indiscreet letter written before my marriage. Years before. A foolish letter, a letter of an impulsive, loving girl.
Written to another man.
It was. And then I met my husband, and I assure you any childish loves were soon forgot.
And somehow Lucas had gotten a hold of this letter.
That is it exactly. Lucas said that he would lay it before my husband unless I helped him. I was to bring him a certain document from my husband's dispatch box. He had some spy in the office who had told him of its existence. He assured me that no harm could come to my husband. Put yourself in my position. What was I to do?
Take your husband into your confidence.
I could not, Dr. Watson. I could not. On the one side seemed certain ruin for my marriage. On the other, in the matter of politics, I am kept entirely in the dark. How could I fathom the consequences? So I agreed. I took an impression of his key. This man, Lucas, furnished a duplicate. I opened his dispatch box, took the paper, and conveyed it to Godolphin Street.
What happened there, madam?
Lucas led me to his study. I handed him the document, eager to receive my own letter in return. At that instant, there was a violent sound at the door. Lucas quickly turned back the drugget, thrust the document into some hiding place there, and covered it over. What happened after that is a fearful dream. A frantic face, a woman's voice, screamed in French, "I have found you," with her. There was a savage struggle.
What happened then?
I ran from the house, and only the next morning in the paper did I learn the dreadful result. My husband's anguish at the loss of his paper went to my heart. I came to you that morning to understand the full enormity of my offence.
You were determined to keep your visit to me a secret, so you covered yourself in a cloak to hide your features, and upon entering my apartments, you endeavoured to sit where you could not be seen from the street.
If the missing document was as important as I feared, I knew it was likely that you and your friend would be under constant surveillance from the moment my husband visited you.
And after you left us?
I was resolved to win back my husband's paper. I thought it must still be where Lucas had placed it. That evening I made my attempt. I brought the paper back with me, and thought of destroying it since I could see no way of returning it without confessing my guilt to my husband.
Was your own letter returned to you?
It was not. Perhaps he would have if we hadn't been interrupted. But I wonder now if I was foolish to think that a villain like Lucas would return the very thing that kept me in his power.
Did you see your letter? Did he show it to you at any point?
He didn't need to show it to me, Mr. Holmes. He knew every detail of its contents. Why are you willing to help me, Mr. Holmes? My actions have made me a traitor to my husband and to the crown.
You are a pawn in a much larger game, your ladyship. I do not seek the ruination of your life. I seek the one who moves the pieces.
Heavens! I hear my husband step upon the stair.
Any news, Mr. Holmes? Any news?
I have some hopes.
Oh, thank heaven. The Prime Minister is lunching with me. May he share your hopes.
Good day, Mr. Holmes.
Sir. And who is this other gentleman that has accompanied you here? I don't think we've had the pleasure.
This is my private secretary, Mr. Mitten.
Mr. Henry Mitten?
Yes.
I say.
It is a distinct pleasure. I have been looking forward to meeting you, Mr. Mitten.
I can't imagine why.
Mr. Holmes.
Let us proceed at once, Prime Minister.
Hilda, my dear, I fear that this is a matter of politics, and I must ask you to step out. Will you take Mr. Mitten through to the dining room? We will join you in a few minutes.
Of course, my darling.
I understand that you have something to report. Have you found the letter, Mr. Holmes?
I confess I have not. I can say, however, that I have inquired at every point where it might be, and I am sure that there is no danger of it being apprehended.
But that is not enough, Mr. Holmes. We cannot live forever on such a volcano. We must have something definite.
I am in hopes of getting it. That is why I am here. The more I think of the matter, the more convinced I am that the letter has never left this house.
Mr. Holmes!
If it had, it would certainly have been public by now.
But why should anyone take it in order to keep it in this house?
I am not convinced that anyone did take it.
Mr. Holmes, this joking is very ill-timed. You have my assurance that the paper is most definitely not in the dispatch box.
You may conceivably have overlooked it.
Impossible, I say. But still, if nothing else will satisfy you, I shall fetch the box.
I assure you, it is necessary.
Here is the dispatch box. Here are the papers you see. Letter from Lord Merrow, report from Sir Charles Hardy, memorandum from Belgrade, note from Lord Flowers. Good heavens, what is this? Lord Bellinger! Lord Bellinger!
Yes, it is it! And the letter is intact. Oh. Hope, I congratulate you.
Thank you, thank you. Oh, what a weight from my heart. But this is inconceivable, impossible. Mr. Holmes, you are a wizard, a sorcerer. How did you know it was there?
Because I knew it was nowhere else.
I cannot believe my eyes. Where is my wife? I must tell her that all is well. Hilda! Hilda!
One last thing, Lord Bellinger. I would dismiss Mr. Hope's personal secretary immediately. It is my belief that Mr. Mitten has ties to some unsavory persons. If another document goes missing, we may not be so lucky a second time.
I will heed your advice, Mr. Holmes. Come, sir. There is more to this than meets the eye. How came the letter back in the box?
Let us say that it is a diplomatic secret.
After returning to 221B Baker Street, Holmes and I enjoyed a pleasant luncheon, all the more enjoyable because the great task of protecting England, nay, all of Europe, from the threat of war had been accomplished. After our meal, we retired to the sitting room. I took upon my normal seat by the fireplace, and was soon joined by my friend. Sherlock, I must say, I am surprised to see you sitting there. It has been your custom to jump directly into your next case once the previous is completed. A moment of stillness is not a bad thing. In fact, there is much talk in the medical community about the benefits of rest.
I am not resting, John. I am waiting. Our case is not yet over.
What is there left to do? The letter has been recovered.
But how did Lucas learn of the document in the first place? Surely that is worth knowing if we are to keep England safe from future threats.
I was under the impression that Henry Mitten was the leak. Although I have to say, Holmes, I do not know how you figured out that he was Trelawney's secretary.
Ah, and now we are getting to the real case. It is you who put me onto it, Watson. When we were at Godolphin Street, you mentioned the list of distinguished names that the European secretary so graciously provided us with. Now, who was missing from that list?
I couldn't say.
The undistinguished names. Describe the document to me, Watson. In general terms.
Well, the paper was unremarkable. Standard for government documents, I would venture. The names were neatly typed.
Aha! And there you have it. Typed. And by who?
Presumably by his lordship's secretary. Ah!
Yes, Watson. You see it all now. It is not only the distinguished department heads and members of the cabinet that knew of the existence of this letter. Presumably, many of the secretaries also had this knowledge, and most certainly his lordship's secretary.
And his secretary found a way to make contact with Eduardo Lucas.
Which was easily done through his brother, John Mitten.
Eduardo Lucas's valet.
You may have noticed that the letter we found from Mitten's brother was typed on the same machine as the list of names. You can tell by the usual methods, of course. Certain discrepancies in the printed letters, etc. But the real damning evidence of the brother's complicity was in the secret message conveyed within the letter. He used this method to pass on, who knows how many, treasonous communications to John Mitten. And it is most assuredly the reason that Mitten did not accompany Lucas on his travels. He had to stay behind in case of any urgent messages.
Brilliant, Holmes. But if this is already known to you, why do you say that you are still waiting? Surely the case is closed.
I am waiting, Watson, for the person who supplied Eduardo Lucas with the letter he needed to blackmail Lady Hilda.
You know who it is?
Oh, yes.
And he is to meet you here?
She has made no formal appointment, but I expect her any minute. And here she is. Come in.
Good afternoon, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson.
Mrs. Adler, I have kept a chair for you. Come, sit down.
It is Mrs. Norton, as I'm sure you remember.
Yes, but I couldn't help but notice that you are listed as Mrs. Irene Adler in the program for the opera.
Well, I made a career for myself before I was married, and to change my name now would be unwise. I consider Mrs. Irene Adler to be my stage name. But I don't mind if you'd like to use it. We are old friends, after all.
To what do we owe your visit?
Your friend knows why I'm here, I'm sure.
The letter has been recovered and returned to the British government.
And what do they plan on doing with it?
I'm afraid that I'm not privy to such information. But I do know that they will never let it see the light of day. It would be too damaging.
Then I suppose that will have to be good enough.
Indeed. I thought that the intention of the letter was to create adversarial relationships in Europe. To stir up war.
Is that what you thought? That I was starting a war? Oh, my. What an imagination you have, Mr. Holmes. You must picture me as quite the villain.
Then why go to such great lengths to take the letter?
It has come to light that the document in question contains certain information about an associate of mine. Information that he would prefer was not widely known.
The document from the foreign potentate was typed.
Yes, dictated to his secretary. Secretaries, assistants, valets, these people are all very useful, Mr. Holmes. Rarely are they paid a wage equal to the work they do. My associate has found many allies there.
And this particular secretary knew more than he should and was attempting to pass that information on?
That is my understanding.
Who is this mystery employer?
Not my employer. My associate. I work for myself, Mr. Holmes.
You didn't answer my question.
No, I did not. Now you've told me that the English government doesn't want the letter seen. And I must say that if they're afraid of it starting a war, I feel confident that I can provide assurance to my associate that it will be safely locked away.
I understand now why you went to such lengths to retrieve the letter.
Oh. What do you know about that?
I know that you impersonated Madame Henri Fournier in order to gain access to Lucas's house on Tuesday evening. Did you know that Madame Fournier was in London?
I did. She paid me a visit the previous night. I had met her in Paris when Carmen played there. Mr. Lucas, or Monsieur Fournier, as I knew him in France, is a great admirer of the opera. We were in the same social circle.
That must have been very convenient for his business.
Oh, most assuredly so. And it was very natural for Madame Fournier to look me up in London. She was in an awful state even then. She was convinced that Henri was seeing another woman. I assured her it wasn't so, but I regret that I didn't realize the extent to which her jealousy had progressed. But, Mr. Holmes, do tell. How did you know I was impersonating her?
Madame Fournier was seen at Charing Cross Station on Tuesday morning. It is likely that she took the quickest possible route to exit the country. The Southeastern Railway would have her in Paris before 7 o'clock Tuesday. Your visit to Godolphin Street occurred sometime after 11 on Tuesday, conveniently after the curtain closed on your performance, but unfortunately well after Madame Fournier was seen in Paris.
Not to mention that you were identified by the constable.
Was I? How did he identify me?
By your picture, of course.
Mr. Holmes, were you carrying my picture on your person? How very interesting.
How did you get a hold of Lady Hilda's letter?
Oh, well, that's something that I happen to be particularly good at. I keep a little collection of insurance, as I call it. Oh, don't look scandalized, Dr. Watson. I only use it if absolutely necessary. In fact, most of the personal items that I have are far safer with me than they are if they were still out there in the world, waiting to be discovered.
Now that Mr. Mitten has been identified and will shortly be removed from his post, surely Lady Hilda's letter cannot be of use to you any longer.
We have lost our leverage there, and letters of that nature do lose their potency with repeat use. She can have it back. Would you like to be the hero who returns it to her? I'll let you buy it off me, if you like. I have it here.
What is the price?
Well, considering it'll be the crown that's paying, let's say £300. When you collect your fee from the Prime Minister, you can just factor the amount in as an expense. Do we have a deal?
We do.
Then the letter is yours, and the lovely Lady Hilda can rest easy now. It is a pleasure doing business with you, Mr. Holmes. I do enjoy our little chats. I really should stop by more often.
I hope that there is no need of such a visit in the future.
I'll show myself out. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Until we meet again.
And we shall meet again, Mr. Holmes. For you see, the game is still afoot.
Very interesting. A woman of her intelligence and cunning must be of great use.
Of use to whom?
That is precisely the question I would like to ruminate upon. Where has Mrs. Hudson hidden my violin? Ah.
And so it was that the mystery of the second stain ended very satisfactorily for the crown, but left a great mystery still to be explored for Sherlock and myself.